He had been this way for a long time, they said. His hair hung down, ragged around his shoulders. His face was streaked with dirt. If he looked straight at you, which he didn't do very often, but if he did, you would see that his eyes were vacant and blank, and you couldn't be entirely sure what it was that he was seeing. He ate things that people just shouldn't eat. He drank things people just shouldn't drink. He slept outside in places people just shouldn't sleep. The children of the town used to sneak up to that place where he stayed in hopes of catching a glimpse of him, and when they did, they would run shrieking all the way back down to their homes. And then their hands would tremble as they told their friends about this crazy man who grew stranger and stranger every time that story was retold. Their parents told them half-heartedly to stop. But the truth is that they, too, had a strange, guilty fascination with this misfit of a man. If you asked them, the village grandmothers would tell you that he was a sweet child once. He had laughed when they tickled him. He had cried when he skinned his knee. But then their faces would darken as they told you that then something happened. He went away for a while and he came back different. They said a demon had entered him. And now he lived the life of a shadow flitting around the edges, visible and invisible at the same time. Ever since he had come back from that tour of duty in Iraq, there had been legions and battalions marching up and down inside his head, trampling his sanity under their steel-toed boots. He raged and he ran and he wrestled with those demons and he just couldn't get away from them. Unlike many of his buddies, he had come back from war alive. But in the eyes of that village, he was all but dead. He had been this way for a long time, the story says. The garrison man wore no clothes, and he lived not in a house, but in the tombs. His hair hung down, ragged around his shoulders. His face was streaked with dirt. His eyes stared vacantly. The children shook at the sight of him. Their parents turned their faces away when they happened by the place where he sat. The ones who had once been his friends tried to help him. If chaining him and shackling him and keeping him under guard can ever be called help. But he would break the chains and tear free from the shackles, and he would run back up to the cemetery, up to the wildness of the tombs where no one would grimace, and no one would shriek, and no one would call him names. In the eyes of that village, he was all but dead, perhaps worse than dead, for he was a threat to the living. He was unclean. He was unsafe. He was unpredictable. He was unwell. He was unwelcome. He had been this way for a long time, the story says, until the day that Jesus came to town. On that day, this man was the very first one to greet Jesus. He had overheard some of the old men telling how he had cured a man with an unclean spirit in Capernaum. He had overheard the children frightening each other with tales of the demons and evil spirits that Jesus had cast out of those troubled people who came to him when he was preaching on the plain. These stories had kindled a new kind of feeling in this man, something almost like hope. And he had begun to wonder if maybe, just maybe, such a transformation might be possible for him too. So he came and he stood before Jesus on the shore and he stepped out of the boat and they locked eyes. They locked eyes and he felt Jesus looking at him in a way different from how anyone had looked at him for years. Do you know how that feels? When somebody looks at you and you know he sees you. Do you know how that feels when someone looks at you and you know she gets it? Do you know what a difference that makes to be seen, really seen? To be known, really known? They locked eyes and they looked at each other for a long moment that felt like an eternity. And Jesus saw through the nakedness and the wild hair, through the chains and the shackles. Jesus looked at this man who was so afflicted that he no longer knew his own name. Jesus looked at this man whose entire identity had been subsumed by the demons that afflicted him. Jesus did not grimace. He did not shriek. He did not run away. He looked at this man and he saw a child of God who did not know that that was who he was. He looked at this man and he saw a child of God to whom no one ever said the words that we just said to Bailey and Gwyneth and Clarence. He looked at this man and he saw a child of God who did not know that he was loved unconditionally, that he was forgiven completely, that he was beautiful in God's sight. They locked eyes and they looked at each other for a long, pregnant moment. And then something happened that's hard to explain. The story says the demons left the man and entered a herd of swine, and the pigs plunged to their deaths in the lake, taking the demons with them. If you're like me, your 21st century mind doesn't quite know what to make of that part of the story. How did Jesus do it? Why did the pigs have to die? Couldn't he just banish the demons outright? Did this even really happen? If you're like me, you wonder about all those things and more. And if you're like me, you wish someone would stand up in the pulpit and explain them. Friends, if you're like me, you're out of luck. I can't explain precisely how that miraculous healing occurred, but here's what I do know. In that moment, everything changed. Somehow, everything changed. The man who had been naked and raving among the tombs found himself sitting calmly at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind. The man who had been dwelling among the dead was returned to the land of the living. The man who had been reduced to the status of an animal was human again. The lost one was found, the broken one made whole. In that moment, everything changed. But the story doesn't end there. The swineherds whose pigs had plunged down the hill to their deaths went and told their employers and their families and their friends what had happened, and the people came out to see it with their own eyes. And when they saw the man restored to health, freed of his demons, they were afraid. Afraid, perhaps, that the healing was only temporary, that soon he would be back to his old ways, breaking chains, running naked up to the tombs. But more afraid, perhaps, that they had been wrong when they gave up on him. More afraid, perhaps, of the power of this man, Jesus, who had done what they had believed to be impossible. The man's complete transformation was too much change too fast. So the people asked Jesus to leave, and he complied. As Jesus turned and stepped back onto the boat, the man begged Jesus to let him go with him, to let him follow him, to let him come along. It's only natural, isn't it, that he would want to stay with this one who had brought him back to life. But Jesus, here's the important part, Jesus said no. He said, "Return to your home and declare how much God has done for you. Return to your home and declare how much God has done for you." I think Jesus knew that this man who had been a stranger in his own land for so long needed to go home. I think he knew what God had said way back in the beginning, that it is not good for humankind to be alone. I think he said, "Return to your home and do not leave until your father has kissed both your cheeks and wept at the sight of you. Return to your home and do not leave until those children who used to torment you are sitting on your knee and telling you stories." I think Jesus said, "It's not going to be easy, but you need your people, and your people need you. So return to your home and do not leave until you are part of the family again." I think that's what Jesus told him to do, and I think that's what he did. I think he went and he sat in his grandmother's kitchen, and he ate the freshly baked bread that she set in front of him. And when that old vacant look came back into his eyes, I think she held him close And she told him that she loved him, that it was not a dream, that he really was back, that he was going to be okay. And then I think he went and he found the shack on the outskirts of town where the girl lived, whose parents had kicked her out when she got pregnant. I think he brought her meals when she was hungry. I think he held that baby when she needed a rest. I think he told her his story, and little by little by little, he convinced her that if he could be loved, then surely she could too. And then I think he went and he found the Iraq War veteran shaking change in a cup on Boylston Street, and I think he saw through those ragged clothes and the smell of cheap wine. I think he saw through all of that to the strong young man who's still there on the inside. And little by little by little, I think he helped him start to face down the demons of PTSD. It wasn't easy. And sometimes that old vacant look would come back to his eyes, but he held him close and he did not let go until he was part of the family again. Sisters and brothers, here's the thing. When Jesus sent that man back to his home, he knew two important things. That man needed his people, and his people needed him. When Jesus sent that man back to his home, he healed a whole village. He taught a whole town that things do not have to stay as they are. And little by little by little, they learned how to be people who nurture wholeness, who celebrate healing, who embrace transformation, who bring one another back to life. If you think Jesus was right, if you think that's good news, if you want to go and do likewise, say amen.